for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. China's decision to allow the value of its currency to gradually rise initially drew positive reactions in global markets. It's a move the U.S. had long been advocating, but many economists believe the actual effect is somewhat unpredictable. Joining me in the studio to talk about what changes in the Chinese currency rate could mean for the U.S. and the global economy, Xiangxin Wei. He's director of the Chazen Institute of International Business at the Columbia University Graduate School of Business, and Fred Bergsten. He's director of the Peterson Institute for International Economics. A little later in the hour, we'll be joined by Jerry Seib. He's executive Washington editor for The Wall Street Journal. You can join us as well, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Join us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Diane.
Fred Bergsten, how have global markets responded since the announcement by China over the weekend?
Global markets have responded positively, not to a huge extent, but positively, and they're right for two reasons. One of the big problems facing the world economy has been the huge trade imbalances, basically China running a huge surplus, the United States running a huge deficit. That was one of the causes of the global crisis we've been through. It raises lots of problems in an ongoing way. This move by the Chinese, if it's carried through to a significant degree, and we don't know that yet, but if it is, that will help reduce the imbalances. The other point is that it reduces the frictions between China and the United States. There's a big G20 summit coming up this weekend. The Congress has been getting increasingly restive about the issue. The Chinese realize that, and their move is intended to preempt at least the worst of that. The markets dislike international conflict on economic issues, particularly between the big countries. So to the extent this heads us toward a friendly and reasonably cooperative resolution of the problems, the markets are relieved and respond in a positive way.
And Xiangxin Wei, the word that I take most concern about is if China decides to carry through. How concerned are you?
Well, I think China is serious about adding flexibility to the exchange rate regime. The primary benefit of the recent policy announcement is for China to regain the effectiveness of a monetary policy control. So that will translate into better inflation control and more benign macro environment for Chinese economy, which is another reason I think the world market welcomes the Chinese move.
But so far, there's a little bit of uncertainty, Fred.
There is uncertainty. I think the Chinese will feel their way. We have now 2 days of experience. In those 2 days, the Chinese have let the rate go up by about 0.4%. If you annualize that, which is, of course, dangerous, but if you did that, it means the rate would go up about 5% over the course of the year. They actually let their rate go up for 3 years, from middle of 2005 to middle of 2008. During that period, they let it go up by annual rates of 6 to 7%. It accumulated to about 20%. Something like that is needed again, a rise of about 20%, maybe 25%, to deal significantly with these imbalances. That's got to be the goal, and so all of us need to monitor how they're implementing the rate. They're managing the rate. This is not a market-driven event. This is clearly managed by the Chinese authorities. So if they manage it, like they did in the previous three-year period, go up 6 to 7% a year, 2 to 3 years, that would take care of most of the imbalance and be quite welcome.
And is that what you expect, Xiangxin?
Not quite. I mean, the trading ban does allow Chinese currency to accumulate a huge amount of appreciation if it wants to. But for A, I don't think Chinese necessarily think it's wise, and B, I don't think the market condition necessarily warrant a drastic appreciation. Even when the drastic appreciation does take place, I'm not as sanguine as Fed about what this will do to both U.S. Current account deficit and Chinese current account surplus.
But on the other hand, China's making this announcement right now takes a lot of pressure off that country with the G20 coming.
Sure. I mean, it's a smart move in terms of political timing. Certainly China intends not to make the currency issue to be a central discussion topic at the G20 summit. I'm not sure they can completely avoid it, but certainly it's better than without the move. But the primary reason for why the Chinese was doing what it is doing now was primarily for the benefit of domestic economy. It's not just to diffuse international friction. It's a side benefit.
How so?
The main cost of having a rigid pegging to the U.S. dollar is to essentially make Chinese monetary policy to much less effective, and the rising inflation and asset prices are partly a result of this. So therefore, injecting more flexibility to the exchange rate system could allow China to have much better control of pricing, goods pricing, inflation, asset pricing, inflation, and other macroeconomic issues. And that's the primary driver for the policy reform.
What could this mean for Chinese imports?
Well, I mean, one might think straightforward answer is when foreign goods become cheaper in Chinese currency, China will import more of it. I mean, we're going to see some of this happening, but there are some complications that will moderate that effect. One is, many of the U.S. companies and international companies have major operation in China, and Walmart is an example. So Walmart China operation source most of its products in China, therefore this exchange rate change won't do very much to its cost structure, and therefore the exchange rate won't mean very much to companies like Walmart. On the other side of the picture for U.S. Exporting firms, the hope was, U.S. can export a lot because goods become cheaper in Chinese currency. Many of the U.S. exporting firms also source their inputs from China, so there's a partial offset. The cost of China-made product components become higher, right? So there will be a positive effect on U.S. exports, but perhaps smaller than one might imagine.
So it sounds as though the talk about this has made it a bigger deal than it really is, Fred.
No, it's a big deal. One has to take account of all the things that Shenzhen mentioned, but the standard analysis does that. And when we project the impact of the currency changes, we, of course, incorporate all those things. Our conclusion is that if China does let the currency go up 20% again, as it did before, and importantly, the other Asian countries around China let their currencies go up with the Chinese currency, which is quite likely, Taiwan, Singapore, Malaysia, South Korea to an extent, all that will lead to a reduction in the U.S. global trade deficit of between $100 and $150 billion per year after it phases in over 2 to 3 years. That would create something like 500,000 to 1 million annual jobs here in the United States, in addition to what we have now. We've got high unemployment, so we've got people not working that could be put to work in the tradable goods industry. So I think it's a pretty big deal. It's not the whole story. The exchange rate is part of a broader rebalancing strategy where China, to offset the loss to its economy from a declining trade surplus, will expand domestic demand, will do more infrastructure spending, will do more social safety net spending to create better health systems for its people, better educational systems, better pension systems. The Chinese, in short, would shift from relying on growing trade surpluses to expanding domestic consumption, domestic services sectors, and go in a rebalanced direction, which, incidentally, their leadership has been arguing for 5 to 6 years is exactly what they want to do. And all that has been blessed by the G20 as a core element in the global recovery from the economic crisis.
I have a somewhat different prediction. I think it's a big deal mostly for the strength of the Chinese economy in the near future, but not as a big deal for U.S. Trade and current account deficit. For one thing, when the Chinese increase its value of exchange rate, you require other countries to not only raise their nominal exchange rates, but having their real exchange rate to follow Chinese exchange rate. I think that's much less sure. Research appears to suggest that real exchange rate it doesn't move as much, certainly over medium term, after a changing nominal exchange rate like what the Chinese currency does. Moreover, you won't have to bear in mind that U.S. runs a huge overall current account deficit, not just against China, but against most countries in the world. So clearly, it's not just a bilateral exchange rate issue. It's not only just with other countries in East Asia, which may or may not follow Chinese
rule. Yeah, and that's what I wanted to ask you about. First of all, Fred said he expects the Chinese currency to move about 20%. Would you agree with that figure?
Well, I mean, you give a long enough time, that will happen.
He says 1 year.
No, I said over 2 to 3 years.
Over two to three years.
Two to three years is quite possible. That I do not disagree with Fred. I don't think the impact of this on U.S. deficit will not be very large. But Chinese currency may very well appreciate by 27% over 2 to 3 years.
And why would you think that other Asian countries might or might not go along with what China does?
The key to remember is what matters for trade balance is real exchange rate. What I'm saying is the real exchange rate of other countries probably will not go up by the same magnitude.
Xiangjin Nguyen, he is director of the Chasen Institute of International Business at Columbia University. Short break. We'll be right back. We're talking about Chinese currency, how it might affect U.S. trade and indeed world trade. C. Fred Bergsten is with me. He's director of the Peterson Institute for International Economics. He's also the author of a book titled China's Rise. Xiangjin Wei is director at the Columbia University Graduate School of Business. Do join us, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Before we turn to Europe, Xiangjin, I want to ask you, you said that this change on China's part was really a victory for the so-called soft touch diplomacy of the Obama administration. How did they handle it?
Well, U.S. had tried a spectrum of policy tools from hardcore pressure to persuasion to anything in between. The current administration, the president and Treasury Secretary Campbell had decided to try a soft touch diplomacy, combining private cajoling with public semi-silence and hoping this will give breathing room to China. The Chinese move allowed the administration to interpret this potentially as a victory of this particular approach. So in that sense, it's a victory of a soft touch diplomacy.
I'm not sure, Diane, it was quite so soft. President Obama sent a very strong letter last week to all the heads of the G20 governments, which the White House then made public and actually made a strong public statement on Friday, pushing the Chinese very hard to move on the currency. The Treasury and the administration had given China a pass for about 2 months when they were given assurances back in March and April the Chinese were going to move. But lo and behold, the Chinese did not move. The administration, including the president, were feeling a bit put upon, and in fact, perhaps even misled. So they started to ratchet the pressure up again. And some of the lead congressmen, Senator Schumer, among others, also began to say, if there's no action by this G20 summit this coming weekend, we're going to move legislation. So they ratcheted up the pressure, and it was in response to that, I believe, that the Chinese finally decided that they would make some changes.
The euro is undergoing its own troubles. How does China's decision affect what's happening in Europe, Fred?
There's a very direct relationship between the recent European developments and the Chinese issue. The new element in these global imbalances we've been talking about is the recent crisis in Europe. The result of that is going to be a very weak European economy for several years and a very weak exchange rate for the euro. The euro has dropped 20% against the dollar in the last 6 months. You combine that with the weak European economy, and the European Union is going to start running a very big trade surplus on its own. That combined with the large Chinese and Asian surplus means the U.S. deficit is going to go up substantially, whereas the whole global rebalancing strategy, the whole Obama economic program, is premised on a reduction in the U.S. trade deficit, doubling our exports over 5 years, and getting a better balanced and more sustainable pattern of U.S. economic growth going forward. So the European change adds to the global imbalances and substantially increases the need for China to take action to reduce its surplus through the kinds of things I talked about before, but including a substantial revaluation of its currency. The rub is that the Chinese sit back and say, well, but our European market is weakening and our currency's already gone up some against the euro, so we're more reluctant. So there is an actual clash of objectives there. But in terms of carrying out the global rebalancing strategy and in defending U.S. economic interests, all this in Europe adds substantially to the need for a substantial Chinese move.
It is important to bring Europe into this discussion. For one thing, over the last 2 years, while the Chinese currency was pegged to the dollar, the Chinese currency has been steadily strengthening in value against the basket of currencies, against all Chinese trading partners on a weighted average basis, primarily because euro has been depreciating against the dollar. Now, this leads to the possibility, I think, now that China allows potentially more flexibility in its exchange regime, the dollar-RMB exchange rate could go either direction, at least in the short run. There could be days in which, market might be surprised, or U.S. may be surprised that, RMB dollar rate goes in the other direction, that is, RMB could be depreciating on certain days. That's made all the more possible by the fact that the euro continues to be weakening and the European economy doesn't seem to be doing as well as one had hoped.
Well, the Chinese have had their currency pegged to the dollar for the last 2 years. During some periods, that means they rode the dollar up against the euro and other currencies. That was particularly true during the height of the global crisis when there was a flight to the dollar for safety reasons. And it happened again recently when the Europeans had their crisis, money moved out of the euro into the dollar. On the other hand, there have been times during this period when the dollar was resuming its long-term decline against everybody else. The Chinese rode the dollar down, and it was making them more competitive. So it goes in both directions.
Right. Yesterday, British Prime Minister Cameron made a statement saying that Britain's going to have to tighten its belt considerably. It's going to have to make big changes. It's going to have to perhaps raise taxes. Everybody is wondering what's going to happen in Britain. How is that particularly related to what could happen if China does move as it says it's going to.
The UK economy is in trouble. It's got worse debt and deficit numbers than most of the continental Europeans. It's a bit of a stretch to say it's looking like Greece already, but it could head in that direction. So the UK, as many of the other European countries, do need to tighten their belts and undertake fiscal austerity measures. The problem is that even the stronger European countries, notably Germany, but France, a couple of others, Holland, are also tightening their fiscal policies, even though they should be expanding to help their European brethren and keep the global rebalancing strategy going. That's, as I said before, dragging the European economy down. It's going to be very weak. Its currency is going to be weak. It's going to run big trade surpluses as a result. And that adds to this global imbalance and adds to the need for China to contribute positively.
Just as China played an important role in the recovery of other Asian economies from the global financial crisis, I expect for Europe, China will be playing the similar role. The stronger recovery of China and stronger growth of Chinese economy will help to pull the European economy up by having China importing more from Europe. Much has been made of the fact that China was the largest exporting economy last year, but China is also one of the biggest importing country in the world. Chinese import growth more or less follow export growth with a bit of a lag. Therefore, European economy and other economies will be helped in part by a strengthening China, which in turn is helped by the exchange rate reform.
And joining us now is Jerry Seib. He's executive Washington editor of the Wall Street Journal. Good morning to you, Jerry.
Good morning, Diane.
You've been following this story for quite a while. What do you see thus far in the statements and the moves that the Chinese government has made?
Well, what I think I see is an attempt to play a different and more mature global role. Now, part of this is in their own self-interest. Obviously, they need to combat inflation internally, and moving on their currency helps them do that. So that's kind of a selfish interest. And they didn't want everybody pounding them later this week when the G20, the Group of 20 large economies, gathers in Toronto. So that was a selfish interest, too. But I also think there is a sign here, and I would put this together with their decision to go along a couple of weeks ago on a sanctions resolution against Iran at the United Nations Security Council as a sign that the Chinese increasingly want to be seen as playing a responsible global role, not simply observing what's happening on the world stage and critiquing it, but participating in it and knowing that that requires certain steps that may or may not be pleasant or risk-free at the time for them, but that it's necessary that they do.
Shang-Jin, what do you think about that China is playing a more cooperative role?
Sure, China likes to be perceived that way, and international praises, kudos are a useful side benefit of the reform. I think that's not the primary benefit of the reform. I also, at the same time, I'd like to suggest that, you know, why greater flexibility is unambiguously good for China. There's a possibility that the government engineered appreciation could be excessive. More recent research suggests there are many, many factors underlying countries' current account deficit and the appearance of undervaluation of one's currency, going beyond productivity difference, financial sector difference, and their demographics. You know, one thing that I discover in my research is that a high and rising sex ratio imbalance in China and many other countries in Asia that have the appearance of undervaluation of currency play a very large role in understanding why the currency appears to be undervalued, why the current account appears to be so excessive. The implication of this is if government are trying to engineer a large appreciation in response to other countries' demand, they could be overdoing it. That's very different from just allowing more flexibility in the currency.
But explain to me how gender imbalance gets in there.
Right. So what I discover in the data, first of all, there's very strong association between a country's level of savings and current account surplus and a country's degree of sex ratio imbalance. By sex ratio imbalance, I mean, in countries like China, you have increasingly more men relative to women in the relevant marital age cohort. This imbalance creates intense and increased competition among men and parents with sons in the marriage market. And they have to compete. They kind of outdo other men in their age cohort. One of the things they think that can help them to stand out is to raise their savings rate to make themselves wealthy. And a byproduct of this effort to outsave others is to have very high national savings rate, which in turn translates into higher current account surplus and pressure for real exchange rate to appear that it's undervalued.
Jerry Seib, any comment on that gender imbalance and its relation to the currency?
Well, it's fascinating because it actually, cuts against something that, you know, the U.S. is and the other Western economies have been pushing for, which is a Chinese economy that stresses consumption and sort of middle-class spending more than savings. That's really what's necessary to open up the Japanese export market for U.S. companies, which is something they're very concerned about.
Is the implication that women tend to buy more and men tend to save more?
Well, I think not. I think the implication here is that there's a savings, as there was in Japan and still is, a kind of a savings culture that it develops. And while that's admirable in many ways, and God knows many people wish we'd had more of that in this country in the last 20 years, in the current environment, it cuts somewhat against what the other economies are trying to get the Chinese to do, which is to open up their markets a little bit more for consumer spending. And that may be cutting against the cultural trend that was just described.
And let me remind you, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Fred Bergsten, if the Chinese start saving more and have less surplus cash to buy our debt, will U.S. interest rates go up?
Could go up a tiny bit, but I don't think very much. Even if the Chinese let their exchange rate go up by the 20% that I'd like to see over 2 or 3 years, they will still be running very large trade surpluses. There's no possibility that they would move into trade deficit or even down to a very small surplus. Their surplus is now running 6% of their economy. The IMF projects it going up to 8% over the next couple of years. The goal, and when I talk 20% on the currency, the goal was only to bring it down to 3%, not to eliminate it. To eliminate it, you'd have to do double that. But say you could bring it down at least a bit by the currency move, they'll still be running large surpluses. That means they'll still be accumulating hundreds of billions of dollars per year, and they'll continue to put most of those into treasury bills. Now, they might put a little bit less, and indeed, we hope they earn less by running smaller surpluses and therefore put less into treasury bills. However, since the U.S. treasury market is a global market, it's huge, it's got investors from all over the world as well as domestically, at most the effect would be a few basis points of adverse movement. I think that's nothing to worry about, and you'll notice the markets have certainly not seemed to worry about that yet in reaction to the Chinese move.
All right, we're going to open the phones now. First to San Antonio, Texas. Good morning, Richard. You're on the air.
Good morning. I have two questions. One is, what impact will this change in their currency policy have on their inflation rate? And then the second question is there a chance that China could lose control of their currency and have a kind of a run on their currency?
All right, Dan, let me turn to you, Jerry Seib. The impact on inflation.
Well, I think the Chinese clearly wanted to have an impact on inflation. It's, you know, it's the nagging internal concern that is the reason, leaving aside whatever the rest of the world wants, that they see some need to move here. So I think it will have some impact on that, and how much depends on what the Chinese central authorities really intend to do, and we'll have to see that in the next few weeks. I personally think there's no chance the Chinese currency will run away. I mean, we saw what the Chinese government did when the economic crunch hit in 2008, which is that they pulled back and pegged it to the dollar and took control back. And I don't think there's any scenario that I can envision in which they wouldn't resort to that if necessary, if they thought necessary, to keep things in a range they're comfortable with.
Great.
It has to be remembered that China has comprehensive capital controls. They do not let money flow freely in and out of their currency or their economy from the rest of the world. There's some leakage in their capital controls, like with any country. There are some ways around it. But they keep things very, very tightly controlled. That's protected them from vicissitudes that other countries have faced. It saved them from the Asian crisis. It saved them from a lot of the recent global crisis. They think the lesson is to maintain those controls, and I don't see much chance that they would change that anytime soon.
Do you agree?
I agree with this, with the qualification that China now has also shown increasing interest in internationalization of the local currency, at least the increasing use of the local currency, RMB, in international transactions. That will motivate some in the leadership to try to loosen up capital controls. But overall, I think there's very little risk that Chinese currency will be running away from their management.
Zhang Jinwei, he is at the Columbia University Graduate School of Business. Short break, and when we come back, more of your calls, your email, your messages on Facebook.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by Vicki and Roger Sant and Island Press, which offers solutions to environmental problems in print, in person, and online at islandpress.org. By the William and Flora Hewlett Foundation, making grants to solve social and environmental problems at home and around the world, on the web at hewlett.org. And by LendingTree, providing customers with the ability to manage their money, credit, and loans all in one place at LendingTree.com. This is NPR.
Millions of Americans practice some form of meditation to promote relaxation and reduce stress, but claims for greater health benefits are controversial. The Power of Meditation, The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. As we talk about the decision on the part of China to flex its dollar, its yuan against the dollar, Jerry Seib, I want to ask you about Senator Schumer's hearing on China trade policy, which is scheduled for tomorrow. What is it that Senator Schumer wants to accomplish? What could Senator Schumer accomplish with the Chinese yuan in mind?
Well, this is going to be a really interesting play to watch over the next few weeks in Washington, which is what Senator Schumer does now. What Senator Schumer has done, and this is for some years now, is he's essentially played the bad cop on this beat, threatening the Chinese with legislation, which has taken various forms over the year, that would essentially either impose trade sanctions on China or, in its current and less onerous form, would allow the president to take various steps to punish the Chinese for not taking steps to address its trade deficit with the U.S. There's a hearing on this legislation on Wednesday. The Chinese clearly hoped, and President Obama used that threat to make the Chinese hope that a move on their currency would ease the pressure in Congress for this kind of legislation. Senator Schumer says he's going to continue to push the legislation. I think he's probably doing that because he knows that he's assigned the role of bad cop in this play and is going to continue to play that role. I think that there's a really good question about whether having seen the Chinese do the main thing the U.S. asked the Chinese to do here, which was to unlock their currency, whether the Senator Schumer can get traction for that legislation. Now, I suspect not, but that doesn't mean he's going to keep pushing it. And by pushing it, he's signaling to the Chinese and in a useful way for the administration, I suspect, not to give let up now that we will be watching.
Fred.
I think Jerry's right. There is a lot of congressional anxiety about the loss of jobs to China's undervalued currency, particularly because, and we haven't mentioned the point, one reason the Chinese currency has been so weak is massive intervention by the Chinese government. They have intervened heavily in the markets to keep the rate cheap. This is not market-driven. The Chinese have intervened about $1 billion a day for the last 3 or 4 years to keep the currency from rising. And that's manipulation or unfair trade practice by anybody's standards. So Senator Schumer and others are rightly antagonized by that. It is important to note that Senator Schumer has changed his legislation dramatically. 5 years ago, he was talking about an across-the-board tariff, 27.5% on Chinese goods if they didn't move the exchange rate. Now his proposal is much more moderate. It would simply call for the U.S. government to count the undervalued Chinese currency as an export subsidy. Figure out whether to apply countervailing duties against those subsidies. If we did it, and we could actually do it without his legislation and may do it anyway, it would be a shot across the Chinese bow, indicating that trade relations could be seriously disrupted if they stop their very protectionist practice of keeping their currency manipulated and undervalued.
Shang Xin.
I think the extent of Chinese currency manipulation we will discover that probably is not as large as many people think. But leaving that aside, I would just suggest that the noise about the Chinese currency issue in the Congress has the danger of distracting us from some other things, potentially harder things, but more important things that the U.S. could do. Most importantly, effort to rein in government deficit, helping to improve private sector savings rates. Those things, efforts will be somewhat undermined, just for the purpose of less attention paying to it, if we have more discussions about, excessive discussion about the currency issues.
All right. To Elkin, North Carolina. Good morning, Kenneth. You're on the air.
Thank you, Mrs. Rehm. Thanks for taking my call. I got
sure.
a comment and a question. Although this discussion, is interesting from an academic standpoint, really, the control of imports from China lay in the hands of retailers and consumers, do they not? And, my question is if the yuan does rise 25%, how long would it take for American industry to benefit from the change in currency value?
Jerry's
Well, I think the rise of the yuan will be gradual, and I think the Chinese have said that, and I think the commensurate changes in the way it affects the economy in the U.S. will be gradual as well, and I don't think it will be huge. I think over time it will have some effect, and the effect will be, among other things, not to increase U.S. exports to China, but to shift imports into this country, their country of origin from China, to other countries, the Vietnams and Bangladeshes of the world that are constructing factory floors, essentially, with even cheaper labor models than China has. So one of the issues here isn't simply what will the U.S. export to China, but where will the U.S. get its exports from? And we may find the quantity of those exports doesn't change over time, even if Chinese policy does. Simply the country of origin may change.
Yeah. Well, the caller, though, rightly said that the decisions are made by importers and retailers, but they're trying to make a profit, and they respond to prices. So when the price of the goods from China and the other Asian exporters goes up, even if there's some substitution from Bangladesh or elsewhere, the price to the American importer goes up. The American retailers will procure fewer imports, and therefore the trade balance improves and our economy is strengthened.
All right. To Michael in Tallahassee, Florida. Go ahead.
Good morning, Diane.
Morning,
thanks for taking
sir.
My call.
Sure.
You've already talked about part of the question I wanted to ask, employment. How will the devaluation of the yuan affect purchasing power for Americans? For example, I live on a fixed income, and I'm not sure this has anything to do with it, but I understand that China has sharply curtailed its purchase of T-bills. Does that factor in any way? And I will take your answer off here.
All right. Thanks for calling, Sheng Jian.
So first I want to note that the jobs in the Chinese export sector are unlikely to come back to the U.S. They are gone a long time ago, with the RMB revaluation. Moreover, the caller's question about the impact on Americans in terms of price effect is very important. Here we need to note that the same exchange rate change may have very different effect on poor Americans versus, middle class and high income Americans. I think that the exchange rate change may very well have a bigger negative effect on poor American households for two reasons. One is most, typical poor American worker does not work in an export industry. And more importantly, most of them actually do shop in stores and buy stuff that were primarily made in China and low-income countries. Therefore, a RMB revaluation, particularly if they are followed by neighboring countries' exchange rate, as Fred was suggesting, would tend to raise the prices on those goods that poor Americans particularly purchase. So therefore, their actual cost of living, even holding their nominal wage constant, will be falling.
Jerry, do you want to comment?
Well, yeah, and I think it's important here in terms of the effect of this on Americans in general to underscore something that we were mentioning just a few minutes ago, but that we probably ought to come back to, which is that currency is not the only issue here. One of the other side of this equation is, what about American exports to China? And there the issue is partly currency and exchange rates, but it's also very much, and probably more so, what American exporters see as structural impediments that the Chinese have put in place, standards, regulations, that sort of thing, that stop the Chinese market from being as open to U.S. exporters as it ought to be. And if you're talking about not just what can American consumers buy, but what kind of jobs will be created in America as a result of international economic trends, that's at least as important and maybe more important in the long run in terms of China as currency exchange rates are.
Now, I want to ask you, Jerry, about American cars versus Japanese cars, because for the first time, Japanese cars ended up something like 14th in popularity against American cars. What's that going to mean in terms of the U.S. trade balance?
Well, I think that's a fascinating story that we don't know the end of yet. I mean, there is either a kind of a temporary reprieve to the American auto industry or a kind of renaissance underway, and I think it could be either one. It will affect what happens with American car sales here. It will also affect what happens to American auto sales abroad. And I think we're at kind of an inflection point, but Fred may have a better sense than I do of where that's going, but I kind of find it hard to predict, but a fascinating story that is just starting to unfold.
Fred?
One big problem is that the U.S. auto industry has not really tried to export. Outside of NAFTA, meaning Canada and Mexico, the U.S. auto companies really don't export. They have foreign subsidiaries that produce in Europe for the European market, now in China for the Chinese market. General Motors makes most of its money now in China, producing out of its huge Chinese facilities for the Chinese market. So it would be a true renaissance if U.S. auto companies started exporting. If the exchange rate of the dollar made it more competitive, that would push them in the right direction. But it really would require a structural change. The big change would be on the import side, where Japanese and increasingly Korean imports have traditionally, over the last couple of decades, got increasing market share. Part of that was because of a chronic undervaluation of their currencies in Japan, in Korea. China has not yet started to export cars to the U.S. in any significant way. But particularly if their currency stayed too cheap, they could become a big new threat. So I'd say the main reason vis-a-vis the auto industry to make sure the currencies and other things are right is defensive, to avoid a risk of new import competition from China to keep our firms from losing out in a new market threat.
Shang-Chi.
I would note two things. First, most Japanese cars sold in America, at least the mass market models, are actually made in the U.S., including Toyota. Therefore, the relative ranking between American and Japanese models won't do very much to U.S. Trade deficit or job creation. It's simply shifting jobs from one U.S. factory to another. A second thing is this Chinese exchange rate appreciation might very well have the impact of inducing more Chinese firms trying to upgrade their technologies, because you cannot just compete on low-cost margin basis, and therefore you might see more and more Chinese companies, including auto manufacturers, to trying to speed up their technological upgrading and trying to test water in international market. We might see more and more automobiles coming out of China as a new export
port. To Rochester, New York. Hi, Pete. You're on the air.
Good morning, Diane.
Morning.
I'm curious, I'm wondering when we're going to have a little bit broader discussion of economic policy. We seem to fall into this conservative to ultra-conservative business spectrum. I'm wondering when we're going to have organized labor have a seat at the table as often as the Wall Street Journal does. Because what I think we're seeing is basically window dressing, an attempt to pacify the working class in this country, that their elected officials are actually doing something about jobs in this country, gainful employment.
Fred.
I did suggest, you may recall early in the conversation, that there would be a big constructive effect on U.S. job creation if we got this currency situation right. The fact is the U.S. has been running huge trade deficits now for a long time, and that, on balance, loses jobs. It means we're exporting employment to other countries, buying their products rather than producing here at home to meet domestic demand. Now, trade's a good thing. It enhances all our welfare. But if it's unbalanced because of unfair foreign practices, like the Chinese currency manipulation, it is robbing jobs from our economy. One of my frustrations, I will say to the caller, is that our own organized labor movement, the AFL-CIO and others, have not put as much emphasis on this set of questions as they have on other trade issues like labor standards around the world, which are demonstrably much less important in terms of creating U.S. jobs. So I always talk with my friends in the labor movement, encourage them to take an active role on these issues, because there's big bang for the buck here in terms of U.S. employment creation.
Jerry Seib is a member of the Wall Street Journal. Do you want to comment?
Well, I don't feel as if I have a seat at a table. I feel like I'm sitting at a distance observing the table, but that's about the best we can do. I would simply note that you do have, at the moment, a Democratic administration and a Democratic-controlled Congress, and organized labor ought to have the ear of the political establishment right now. If it ever does, there's been some tension in that relationship, obviously, although that's probably natural. I do think the most significant thing here is that, you know, President Obama made a point in a State of the Union address, and this gets to something Fred was just alluding to, that the real goal for job creation here has to include a significant increase in U.S. exports to other countries, and that's got to be the goal of policy, and how we do that is a crucial question. That's actually an area where it's not just the organized labor, but the Chamber of Commerce, which disagreed with President Obama about all kinds of things in his State of the Union address, has made a point over and over saying, yeah, we're with that goal too. So there ought to be some common ground here. The question is getting at policy, as Fred suggests, that gets you from here to there.
And you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Here's an email on jobs. And Greg says, according to one of your guests, there's a direct relationship between the value of Chinese currency and American jobs. That is, the higher Chinese currency, the more jobs we can create and keep at home. It angers me that America is the only nation that does not put its own citizens' welfare first. We've allowed China, Japan, Korea, and India to take millions of jobs in the name of some abstract idea called free trade. Funny how no other nation allows foreigners to take their citizens' jobs except America. briefly, Fred.
I think it's true that the United States has been willing to run large trade deficits, which other countries have simply not been willing to. Part of that is because the dollar is the world's key currency. Other countries have been willing to finance our big deficits. And in the short run, it's attractive. As we said before, those cheap goods come into Walmart, low-income Americans buy them. We can finance them on a credit card, basically, where the credit card doesn't get collected by the lender.
It's not just low Americans who are buying it.
Not only, but even more important for them. But the point is, the U.S. has been willing and able to run big trade deficits. It's okay up to a limit, but it's gone much too far. The fact that some countries, notably China, have manipulated their currencies and increased the number substantially does have to stop in terms of U.S. job creation and the overall health of our economy.
Fred Bergsten at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor of The Wall Street Journal. And Shangjun Wei, director of the Chasen Institute at the Columbia University Graduate School of Business. Thank you all so much.
Good to have been here.
Thank you.
And
thank you,
thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Andrew Chadwick. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts.